Welcome, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Earth Week. Happy Earth Day, everybody. Just a little reminder. If you would like to qualify for a trash picker, courtesy of moi, to take along on your walks so that you can help beautify the environment and conserve our beautiful resources that we all like to hunt, fish, camp, hike, walk in here in Wisconsin, text us through the app, which you can get for free. Be sure you include your name, your email, that you'd like to qualify for the trash picker, and a cell phone number, and you will be entered to win. Because I just picked up a picker about 2 weeks ago, and it's my new thing. Bring my garbage bag and my picker with me everywhere I go. Also, remember, here on Civic Media, we now have daily news. So go check out our daily news. If you are, let's say, in Bull Falls, just go to bullfallsradio.com and you will click on the banner. You'll hear at the top of the website. You can hear our local Civic Media News Roundup podcast. You can also sign up for our newsletter. It'll drop right into your email inbox. So check that out. Also, tonight we're going to have the Pittsburgh Pirates and Milwaukee Brewers. They're in Pittsburgh at 5:05 p.m. That will be broadcast live on Richland Center, WRCE, WRJN in Racine, 99.9 FM, Kenosha, 98.1 FM, Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, and 98Q Country, WCQM in Park Falls at 98.3 FM. So that's how I like to ease into my Mondays, with a little brew crew in the afternoons. But right now, really excited to bring my next guest onto the show, joined by Dr. Ann Getson, a family physician in Milwaukee who has dedicated her career to health equity and advocacy through leadership, education, and clinical roles. She recently led an accredited interdisciplinary educational series for clinicians focused on the inequitable, the unequal impacts of climate change on our families and the health of our kids and our grandmas and grandpas and me and you and your neighbors and all that stuff. So welcome, Dr. Ann Getson. So nice to have you on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Really happy to be here and joining you today.
Yeah, it's such a timely topic. I heard you speak to a group of educators at MPS. That's how we met, helping them reach kids in MPS at younger ages. And you began by sharing a little bit about the fact that you ended up at COP28, which is just fascinating. Tell people what COP28 is and how you got there.
Yes. So COP28 was this year's United Nations Climate Conference, where all of the negotiations for our countries that participate in the United Nations come together. COP stands for Conference of Parties. So you have all of these
acronym salad at the
right,
UN, for sure.
And a whole mouthful of a lot of jargon and policy. And it was hosted in Dubai this year. And when I arrived and I was standing in a warm desert atmosphere with this big arch of all of the flags of the world, the classic United Nations circle, I was just kind of stunned. I was wondering too, how did I get here? Right. So it's been a really, really interesting journey and process. But I guess starting from the most recent chain of events bringing me there, I'm participating in a fellowship in climate and health science policy. And so this is a physician fellowship program run through the University of Colorado's medical school. And it aims to bring physicians to the table in these discussions about how climate change is essentially impacting our health, just like you said, of our loved ones, our family, us. Yeah. And we haven't always historically done very well at connecting those dots.
Yes.
So to have a physician cohort present at the United Nations negotiations around climate change and global policy was really deeply impactful, because when we all as a global community come to understand that when we're talking about climate change, we're not just talking about economics or events that are going to happen hundreds of years down the road.
In the far, far off future.
That's right. We're talking about the air we breathe now and the communities we live in now.
Yes, it's a powerful moment. It's a powerful time. I like to help people remember that Wisconsin has really always been about natural resources and always been about conservation. Great place on a great lake. It's been the heart of our tourism industry. Most people I know enjoy and love the outdoors in some form or fashion here in Wisconsin. And so it's incredibly important to each one of our families. Given that, Dr. Gutson, I just wanted to get your impression. We're going to play a little bit. This is Senator Ron Johnson. Last year in the Senate budget hearing, just about at this time, it was literally almost a year ago to the day, which I find pretty ironic. And he is having a back and forth, a discussion with a University of Chicago economist that's talking about sort of the quantitative, the economic costs of the health impacts of our failure to conserve and preserve our beautiful environment. So this is Ron Johnson a year ago with Dr. Greenstone of the University of Chicago. He's an economist. Let's take a little listen, see what you think.
Mr. Greenstone, I actually found that chart of yours somewhat comforting for at least America. When you take a look at the mortality risk, again, these are all projections. I don't put any stock in them whatsoever, but by your own projections throughout the United States, because of climate change, we're going to actually have a reduced risk of mortality overall in the United States. And wouldn't that really tie in with what the study from Lancet in 2021 said, that we suffer about 600,000 deaths due to heat every year, but 4.5 million deaths because of cold. So in terms of excess deaths, a warming globe is actually beneficial. In my own state, your study shows that we'd have a reduction in mortality of somewhere between 54 and 56 people per, I guess it's 100,000. Why wouldn't we take comfort in that?
So thanks for the question, Senator Johnson. And what the work shows and the chart is that the effects of climate change are going to be very unequal. And absolutely, Wisconsin, Chicago, where I live, the reduction in cold days, the benefits from that will outweigh the damages from the hot days. But if you look more carefully at that, there's large swatches of the country where the damages will be much larger. I'm not familiar with that study. What I am familiar with is my study. Your characterization of it is incorrect.
Well, your study is very favorable to my state. Our mortality declines by 54 per 100,000.
Wisconsin will benefit in terms of mortality. There are 49 other states in the United States. Many of them will suffer. Many of them will suffer more than Wisconsin will gain. And that is the nature of climate change. It's very unequal.
So Dr. Greenstone was explaining some of what you see as a family physician. Now, he was speaking both on a global basis and also sort of regionally within the United States. But I wanted to take the opportunity, Dr. Gutson, to let you talk about what you see in your practice for the impacts of our failure to conserve, or however we want to put it, here in Wisconsin on Wisconsin families, and just your overall reaction to that exchange.
Yes. So first, before we even listen to the clip, I appreciated your centering. This is about our community, that we all experience and connect and love things about our environment and our space. That's a huge part of what we love about living in Wisconsin. I grew up playing in the garden and in the woods and rivers with my family, coming from Wausau, Wisconsin, and continue to love that. My daughters talk about Lake Michigan being their favorite lake because they just love that space. And I think there's a natural connection that we all have, and we want to protect those things regardless of our political parties.
Yes.
I think second, what we're seeing and witnessing with changes in our environment and our surroundings are so complicated.
Yes.
And there's a lot of really in-depth and important scientific work to help explain things. So when we talk about climate change, that was historically paired always with global warming. And I just want to have a little bit of a level set of what we understand about that. Because extreme heat events and extreme cold events can both be linked to what we call climate change. So as our whole planet heats up and warms up, that puts a lot of energy and power and activity into our weather systems. And so sometimes that means an extreme heat event, a heat wave.
Yep.
And sometimes that can mean a bizarre cold snap like they saw in Texas. Sometimes scientists don't want to pin every single event to climate change specifically if they can't say it with enough certainty. But what we can say is our energy patterns are really disrupted, and we see a lot more bizarre weather events like 100-year flood events,
yes,
more frequent and severe heat events. And all of those things are linked to or caused by how our planet is heating up. So there's more energy and it drives unusual patterns in our weather. And so I would, if I had the chance to talk with Senator Johnson, would want to explore that a little bit, because it is really complicated content. And I've had the opportunity with my fellowship to explore that and gain a better understanding of it.
When we come back, we're going to have to take just a few very, very brief messages. But I want to start to talk with you about how are some of the ways that our families here in Wisconsin are being impacted, not just with some of these more extreme weather fluctuations, but in all sorts of different ways in the ecosystems that we enjoy as families and recreate in, and how that's changing and impacting our family's health. I'm joined this half hour by Dr. Ann Getson, a family physician who has really dove headfirst into understanding and trying to get her arms around how changes to our environment and some of our short-sightedness in conserving our environment is impacting the health of each one of us, your kids, your neighbors, your grandparents, your teachers, your friends, and your colleagues. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've got a question for Dr. Getson, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We'll be back in just a moment. Having a great Earth Day. We're going to have a special lineup this entire Earth Week here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Going to be joined by all sorts of experts. We're going to look at how we enjoy the environment and how we can conserve and protect it here in Wisconsin. I don't know a single person that grew up in this state that didn't spend some time outside enjoying our wonderful natural resources as a child. My guest today, Dr. Ann Getson, a family physician that is really focused her learning as of late on how these changes in our environment impact our family's health, which I think it's the linkage, right? Often we talk about all this science stuff and it's really complicated and it seems like it's this far off thing, but it's actually about how it's impacting our health, isn't it, Dr. Getson?
It absolutely is. And we let off talking about participating in a big global United Nations conference. But when it comes down to it, I'm a family doc and I'm a mom. And so I'm thinking about what does all of this mean for the health of my own kids and all of my patients and community that I'm dedicated to. That's why I do this work. And so there are a lot of elements that I've recognized. We have to adjust how we're counseling and helping people be aware of what's happening. If you might remember this past August, at the beginning of the school year, we had a couple of back-to-back cancellations of Milwaukee Public Schools because of the heat wave and intensity, right? And parents may have felt frustrated. It disrupts a lot of things, having people out of school. But the reasoning for that is because our bodies aren't ready for huge jumps and shifts. And when we don't have air conditioning and mechanisms in a given environment and building to keep the temperature in a good, stable space our bodies are used to and prepared for, it can really stress us, especially for the little ones. So people, basically what we talk about at the extremes of age in medicine. But our young ones, our children, and our elders have more vulnerable heart and lung systems. And when you are stressed out with the heat, which all of us know when we're out in the middle of a hot summer day and worn out and feeling overwhelmed, you're more vulnerable to getting sick from that. And then particularly for our elder community, you layer on certain types of medicines, make you more at risk for severe heat effects. Because as a side effect, the medicines keep your body from being able to respond appropriately.
To cool, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So it can become a major health threat. And we also know in a lot of communities, in a lot of cities where you have less green space, the temperatures are much, much higher. In 2022, Milwaukee got to participate with a heat mapping campaign where folks walked around the different neighborhoods with thermometers, documenting precisely how hot it is block to block to block. And we know that spaces where there aren't green trees and parks that bring us that shade and bring in more oxygen, the temperatures are substantially higher.
How much can a temperature change between one block to another, right? Shade or green area to cement jungle?
Yeah, so you can have up to 7 to 10 degrees difference. And then you put in, add on top of that, being in a building, for example, that doesn't have any adequate cooling, or you've lost electricity for a few weeks because of inability to pay their electricity bills. And you might start seeing how different factors start piling up to make these bad outcomes and these extra challenges happen more often to communities who have fewer resources.
We talked a little bit during a quick break about vector-borne diseases and how we have some canaries in the coal mine when it comes to how these things might start to impact our health, even for those of us in the middle ages, meaning our middle years, and not at those extremes of age. Tell us more about that, Dr. Getson.
Yeah, so first, vector-borne illnesses are diseases that we talk about being carried by different types of insects most often, or bugs, right? So not being an entomologist who's an expert in this.
We can call them bugs.
So ticks and mosquitoes obviously are the biggest ones that we face. So you can see over the course of the last several years in Wisconsin, you can see those rates of Lyme disease are continuously climbing. And if you've lived in this region long enough, you might remember when Lyme disease used to you'd see in southern Wisconsin, and it's really completely spread. And that's linked to how our temperatures are changing, and that changes the distribution of where the ticks live. So that's one piece that changes how much Lyme disease we're seeing, for example. A second piece of that is, when are the ticks active? So now we know we've got a lot of Lyme disease in Wisconsin throughout the whole state. But unfortunately, like this past winter, we all understand how unusual that was.
Yes.
With such little snow and a lot of warm temperatures. When temperatures come above freezing, ticks become active. They don't have a, well, it's February and 70 degrees, I shouldn't wake up now because it's February kind of a calendar, right? They respond to the temperatures. And so our historic tick seasons that we're used to being on the watch, doing your tick checks, making sure you have your insect repellent, protective clothing, all those protective things we talk about, we need to raise our level of awareness. And this is what I want to talk to my patients about, is making sure you know when you go to play in the woods and run around, even though you weren't used to watching out for ticks at an earlier time of year, now you need to.
That is but one of many, many impacts. Where should people go? Concerned about, when do I need to start testing or being on the lookout for ticks and doing tick checks? Where do you go if you're a mom or a dad up in Rhinelander or in Wausau or the Apostle Islands or over in the Dells? Where's a good resource for people to learn more about these different effects and how to protect their families?
Yes. So our public health services within our country and our state are huge resources. So think about the CDC when you're looking at a national picture. picture and where things are happening. And also, please refer to your local health department and the Department of Health Services websites. They'll show you where those tick-borne illnesses are going, and they'll also give you a lot of handouts and important information on how to protect yourself.
You mentioned very briefly about the HHS pledge for the health sector to commit to emissions reductions and resilience goals. What is this and where can people find out more about it?
Yes. The HHS pledge is all about what we are doing as healthcare systems to play our part in improving our role and protecting the environment. So look through there's a number of different resources. I'd encourage you to actually look at the Office of Climate Change and Health Equity for a lot of really good information about the link between climate and health. Mm. They have something called a Climate and Health Outlook, and you can also find information on the HHS pledge there.
Wonderful. My guest this half hour, who I'm so appreciative of, Dr. Ann Getson, a family physician studying and helping us all understand how conservation efforts and how our environment that we love so much, our outdoor recreation, all those good things, how they impact our family's health when we don't pay attention to the signs that our natural resources and environment are giving us about its health. It is not a climate crisis. It's a health crisis, people.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Dr. Ann Getson. I appreciate you being here. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. I got some important information coming up about high school sports in Wisconsin. Speaking about being outside and recreating, some very, very critical decisions coming up for the WIAA. Go anywhere. We'll be right back with that after your farm update. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. A big thanks to Dr. Ann Getson for helping us all understand how conservation efforts end up helping our families stay healthy, how the climate and the changes and some of the ecosystems that we're seeing, that trickles down and it impacts your kids' health, your elderly neighbor's health, and your health as well. Again, big thanks to Dr. Getson. Happy Earth Day. Happy Earth Week. So as an old has-been athlete, y'all know on occasion I like to cover some sports news. And this one, what I think, is one of the most fascinating things to happen in WIAA athletics in decades. And I'm so glad that I don't have to figure all this stuff out on my own, but I'm joined by Civic Media sports reporter and friend of the show, Jimmy Koska. What's up, Jimmy? Thanks for coming on.
I'm happy to be here. Just as a note on Earth Day, our school district here in southwestern Wisconsin is doing a lot of those activities, and we have an 80-acre school forest, so every grade is going out to do something Earth Day in particular. So we're very excited for conservation efforts here in the Lower Driftless area and the southwestern part of the state. So a great, great day for everybody here in Wisconsin.
And just a reminder, if you would like to qualify for one of the Maggie Dawn special trash pickers, so that when you're out on your walks around your house, you can pick up the trash, just text in via the app. Go get the app from our free, any app store, it's free. Just text in, hey, I want a trash picker for free from Maggie. Give me your name, your email, and your phone number, and we will enter you to win one of the three that I'm going to give away this week. Because you know what? Picking up trash, it's good for everybody. It'll make you feel good, too. But, Jimmy, let's get to literal business here for the WIAA. What are they considering doing that could potentially change high school sports significantly?
There are three amendments in front of the membership in the WIAA this week, and one of them involves the opportunities for student athletes to earn money through name, image, and likeness deals. You've heard a lot about this at the college level, of course, and I think for people who follow sports closely, very acutely aware of what it's meant in college athletics, where you see the Wisconsin Badgers, for example, lose half their starting lineup in transfers. And a lot of the reasons for that are cited are NIL opportunities. Well, at the high school level, there are some key differences in the high school part of this. And that's, I think, something the WIAA has tried really hard to educate its the administrators at each school and the athletic directors at each school about, because there are some big differences between what's being allowed at the high school level versus in the NCAA. And I think that probably the biggest one of that is that a student athlete isn't going to be able to use their school or the conference or the WIAA in any kind of NIL deal. So they can't go wear the school uniform and go advertise saying, I'm a star player for whatever high school, right? Also, high school players under this, if this passes, will be allowed to have NIL agents. And now agents, it doesn't mean Jerry Maguire walking right around screaming, show me the money. This means a coach or a staff member or somebody collecting potential NIL opportunities for student athletes. So there are big differences between what is in front of the WIAA membership and all 515 member schools and what's happening in the NCAA. But it is up for vote on Wednesday in Stevens Point, and it has brought a lot of attention to high school sports, probably on par with the shot clock discussions of the past few years.
Yeah, indeed. So what we've got coming is the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association, for those of you who don't swim in the high school sports pond all that often, the WIAA, is considering changing its rules to allow high school athletes to effectively get paid by a advertiser to use that high school athlete's name, image, or likeness, also referred to as NIL. You, Jimmy, just helped us understand some of the differences that we see between the NIL deals in college sports under the NC2A's rules and what we might see in the WIAA. Again, those differences were the high school students can't basically get an NIL agent to help them secure deals. What was the other, there were two other differences, I think, that you pointed out. What was the other two big differences, Jimmy?
You can't use your school conference or the WIAA in those advertising either. And that's, and this is one I was going to save for its own point, but we'll just discuss it now because it segues nicely into just understanding the differences. Another key point of this is that if you're a business or somebody involved with an organization and you spend money to have a student athlete advertise on your behalf, you no longer can donate money to that student athlete's school or athletic program. This is the point that I think tripped up a lot of administrators in this process, is they're worried, there was some worry anyway, that businesses would just give the money directly to students, student athletes in NIL deals, and not donate anymore to, you know, booster programs and athletic departments to help things, especially in a time when school budgets are really up against it.
Right.
And we see a referendum. We saw 180
referendums.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. We've had so many referenda. I'm losing track. You know, you over 100 and it just kind of all
blend together.
Sense, but,
yes.
But that was some of the worry. And that was actually one of the points brought up at least two of the different athletic director association meetings last week, was talking about that point. But hearing today on a podcast on wisports.net, Mel Dow, who's the associate director of the WIAA, talked and said in their surveys of the other nearly three dozen states who allow NIL for high school student athletes, it is really just, it's tenths of a percentage of the number of student athletes who actually engage in these deals. It's really for the elite of the elite, right? For the top tier players or students that would get this, the performing, you know, athletes, and doesn't necessarily see that. He did a great job in likening it to, because he said it flashes back to his marketing classes, right? You want to reach as broad of an audience as you can. Are you going to spend your advertising dollars on one person, or are you going to put it into a program that serves an entire community? So I think that's their way, the WIAA's way, when they're trying to educate administrators and schools about it, about maybe that won't be, it could happen, but it won't be as widespread as maybe you'd think. But I think that was the number one concern coming into this process for schools, is that there's a potential source of funding for some of the programs that aren't covered necessarily under school budgets that could go away if all of a sudden a sponsor decides they're just going to focus on one student.
Which you would have to think is sort of a passing thing. One of the questions that I had was, again, the rule includes a limitation that basically says you cannot enter into, you cannot be the payor in an NIL deal with a high school athlete if you're somehow already affiliated with the school. So you're a booster, an alumni, staff member, et cetera. And I thought, this is really interesting because you could see, and certainly I'm hearkening back to my old AAU days, where you would get sort of headhunted, like the top prospects in certain sports, you know, coaches would be out there recruiting you. And I could see the WIAA being concerned that serious diehard boosters would effectively try to buy players into coming into certain high school programs. Jimmy, what's your take on that? I mean, I think to a certain extent, they're not going to really be able to prevent that.
Well, the whole reason this rule exists is to prevent exactly what you're talking about, a collective of people trying to influence where a student's going to go and play at the high school level. That's what this rule is designed for, where if you're going to invest in this student athlete, well, if you're involved with a school or a program already, you're not allowed to do that. So there's a lot of guardrails in place in the WIAA's amendment version and in the associated amateur status language. This is a lot of big words just to say that there are things in place to try to keep this, you know, as focused as it can without it opening it up to what's happening in college with a lot of player movement or a lot of student athlete movement. And we have to consider too that there are still transfer rules in place at the high school level. So right. If you transfer and it's not a family move, you still have to sit out a year at the varsity level. So there are still things in place that kind of limit that freedom of player mobility, right? The other part of it too, and as you mentioned, you know, the booster or that coach or that teacher, mm-hmm. preventing those collectives, again, it specifically cited as a reason, as a guardrail to all of this. In fact, the way that the rule is written as to who's allowed to participate, and there's a whole bunch of third parties listed, and we've got them all listed, by the way, on our Civic Media website. So if you go to your local website or civicmedia.us, this is all outlined. The document that's being voted on by the WIAA is in this article. So if you need more background on this, but the list of that, it's specifically in there to prevent the influence of somebody going to another school or transferring. That's what the rule is intended for. I know, Maggie, as someone who you're very well versed in the legal world, this all kind of speaks your language too a bit, but that's what the rule is intended for.
Well, it's interesting because you can see them responding to what's happening in some of the college programs where these collectives have basically been set up, and it's very clear that athletes are getting poached, which, you know, has always been there to an extent, but the idea that a player can get direct payments is really very literally changing the game, right? Changing the rules of the game. One other note, I thought this was important. These kids cannot enter into an NIL arrangement unless it is age appropriate. So no booze, no gambling, no tobacco, no firearms, no pay to play kind of stuff, which I thought was important to point out given the amount of sports betting that's going on now. I mean, you can make a book on pretty much anything, and Vegas certainly does. We got Pottawatomie opening up their new sports betting outlet coming up too. You looking forward to that, Jimmy? Are you a sports bettor yourself, sir?
I'm not a sports bettor myself. My brother lived in Vegas. I do the thing where I put 20 on a team to win just to say I did it, but I was never really in that world. that specific section, that directly mirrors what the WIAA requires when it comes to broadcasting its tournament games. So if we as a Civic Media radio station were to go out and broadcast a game, we also can't have from those categories, those age-inappropriate things. So that's a fairly consistent point across WIAA's platform.
What's your take on the NIL, Jimmy? What do you think? Is it going to be good for high school sports? Is it just inevitable?
So I'll speak to the inevitable part of this because that's exactly what this is. According to the NFHS, there are 33 states that already have some form of NIL, and it includes three of our four border states. Michigan is considering their own version of it. Mel Dow, in that podcast I was speaking of at Wisports, my good friend Travis Wilson is the one who runs that site. What Mel said was that if this were not to pass this week, he fully expects within a year that through litigation or legislation that we'll have NIL in Wisconsin. So he said he's very confident in this, because other states have it and we don't. And you also talked about the fact they had over 100 amateur status reviews this year at the WIAA. And he said most of them would never have happened. They'd be legal under the NAL guidelines, telling us that there's, you know, more than 51 cases of this where kids are doing it anyways. So they're seeking this already. But you look at the legislation in Wisconsin, there was actually proposed legislation for NAL rules at the college level for, you know, the state schools, right? So this is something that's also on the forefront for legislators looking at it to get onto a quick bill to be a part of this, right? So I agree with Mel that this is coming.
Yes.
And if it's not coming through an amendment process that the schools control, it's going to happen to them either through a lawsuit or it's going to happen through the legislature.
Yeah, I too agree that this is simply an inevitability and it would happen through litigation as what went down for the NCAA. I mean, these kids are going to get paid. I'm shocked to hear that there's 51 of them already. I thought there was going to be...
I don't know if the number's 51. I'm just saying he said out of 100, most of them were... I just said at least 51. But yeah, he said of those, most of them would have been okay. So I don't know what the exact number is. I'm paraphrasing a podcast.
I mean, how many like rock star high school athletes are there? I mean, half of Milwaukee probably is like, well, let's look at some up north school districts where maybe my kid can be a standout star. It'll be interesting to me to see if you actually do see families relocating and whether or not this rule, again, trying to restrict the involvement of school associated people in the NIL deals will work. My thanks to you, Jimmy Kosko, for being here on the Maggie Dawn Show talking about this, what I think is a watershed moment for the WIAA.
Well, I thank you for having me. And for anybody looking for more context or information, the full document, the amendment document, anything else that you need, I tried to summarize best I could. Just go to civicmedia.us or your local civic media radio station to learn more.
Thanks so much, Jimmy. Great to have you. I hope you come back real soon. We'll keep talking with SCO Sports, which I love. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere, anybody. I got a couple of closing thoughts this kickoff to Earth Week, April 22nd, after these important messages. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My big thanks to my friend, Civic Media's very own Jimmy Kosko, helping us understand the big rule change before the WIAA, allowing high school athletes here in the state of Wisconsin to potentially enter into name, image, and likeness contracts where they get paid for being famous high school sports athletes. That would not have been me. I mean, I made a little varsity hoops my freshman year in high school, but I wasn't getting any NIL deal.
No. And as a drama club band member myself, the only times we got really nice photos was if we sold out a house or something like that.
Right.
So it wouldn't be me either. No.
I think, you know, a couple of girls that I played hoops with, I went to Rufus King, if you're a newer listener. Couple of the girls I played hoops with went on to some pretty prestigious college programs. One actually went to Tennessee, played for Pat. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking on her last name. Pat Summerall, who's one of the winningest coaches in all of women's college basketball, all of college sports. A couple of gals that I played with that probably would have been NIL contenders back in the day, but not I. I was a grunt. I was a workhorse on teams. I made teams because I was going to work darn hard all the time. No complaining. Just run the stairs. If I ever have to run stairs again, I think my head's going to levitate. It was the punishment that my hoops coach would use if we weren't hitting our line drill time. So if you don't know what a line drill is, start at the base of the basketball court. You go up to the free throw line. You touch it. You come back. Touch the baseline. Then you go up to half court. You come back. Free throw line down at the end. And then the full court. Coach used to time the line drills at the beginning of practice. And then at the end of practice, we'd run the line drills again. And if we couldn't hit the times from the beginning of practice, we'd run stairs. None of this makes any sense. Of course you're more tired at the end of practice, coach. So eventually, it only took us a couple of go-rounds of this before there was a little coup. There's a little strategery amongst the Rufus King Generals women's high school team circa 1995. We figured out, don't run the line drills at the beginning of practice so fast so we won't get stuck running stairs for 30 minutes at the end of practice. But boy, I hated those suckers. Ugh, just gives me the willies thinking about it. Anyways, again, my thanks to Jimmy Koska. I just think this is a fascinating moment for interscholastic athletics, especially in some of the rural schools where high school athletes really can become household names, thinking about especially football, those kinds of things. But all this, and Anya raises a good point here. I also was a drama kid and I was in orchestra and I did all these different things, and nobody's handing out NIL deals to the first violin concertmaster at your local orchestra. And boy, those programs struggle for funding mightily. I would say more than athletic programs do. And I think there's, all these issues that come up related to, again, secondary education and primary education and how we fund our public schools. The arts matter. They matter just as much as your gym class does. This is a key way that we communicate with one another. And again, the funding for those programs has really taken a hit. So it's nice to talk about the NIL rights for the high school students, and maybe we're going to see some breakout stars getting paid and all. Isn't that all great? I want to know, how are we going to continue to fund the arts programs? Theater, music, visual arts, photography, the yearbook. I mean, we used to fundraise to get our yearbooks done every year. There wasn't a slog of funding, and it was, I mean, you want to buy a brownie so we can publish a yearbook this year? Oy. Were they like the coolest kids in schools, the one that worked on the yearbook in your high school?
For my high school, yeah. Genuinely, yes, because they would go to yearbook award stuff and win awards for how good our yearbook was. So I have a very different experience there than most, but somehow, yes.
Our yearbook peeps at Rufus King High School for the College Bound on 19th and Olive in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, off the 60 bus on Capitol. Those yearbook kids in the mid-90s, they were very cool. You wanted to be friends with the yearbook kids because then you would get your face in the yearbook. All right, I'm about to tell y'all a very embarrassing Maggie Dawn story. This is probably going to come back to bite me in the tush. But as I just alluded to, when I was in high school as a freshman, I made varsity basketball, which was kind of a big deal back then. I was the only freshman on the team. I had run cross country. I played softball in the spring, barely missed varsity. I think I was like the next one. So started every game as JV. Anyways, I'm getting to the point here. When yearbook started to get cooking my freshman year, I knew a bunch of the kids that were on yearbook. I was for it because did all this stuff, was in a bunch of groups, academic decathlon. You get to know everybody in your high school, even though we had a huge high school. And at one of the pep rallies when we were playing our crosstown rivals, Washington High School, Washington came to Rufus King. And now Rufus King's gym is one of those seated where the gym is down and then the bleachers are up. So the guy that was calling us all out, the starting five, and I started that year, gave us nicknames based on our first and last initials. Okay. So my first and last initials are MD. I know this is gonna bite me in the rear. I know it is. So I got called out first of everyone because I was the youngest. I was the junior member of the starting five. So Maggie, and then he needed to come up with an M and a D nickname. Maggie Blump Blump Dawn. So Maggie Mad Dog Dawn. This was back in the Arsenio Hall days, everybody. And so like I come out, I break through the paper. I just wanted to make my little layup and not screw up and look stupid in front of all the cool kids. And like the entire gymnasium is, woo, 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 like the Arsenio thing, and sort of barking at me. And I thought my entire high school was calling me ugly. And I made the layup. Anyway, so every yearbook from thence on, basically every picture of me doing anything is Mad Dog Grr or some version of that. Like, my name doesn't exist except attached to my picture, you know, in the formal sit-down photo from Rufus King High School from the College Bound 1995 to 1999 yearbooks. Mad Dog Grr. That'll do it for Mad Dog this afternoon. You've been listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. I'll be back tomorrow. Listen, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it is better when we stand together. Be safe out there, everybody, and happy Earth Day!